almost certainly, each of us knows someone who has been directly or indirectly affected by alcoholism or substance abuse. For some, it's an issue that gets swept under the rug, something that doesn't get discussed. For others, perhaps dealing with an alcoholic family member, it can be a source of endless frustration and confusion. But no matter how we're affected, directly or indirectly, there are solutions and hope. I'm Kermit Poling, and joining me on tonight's Health Matters is Betsy Williams, psychologist and the executive director of the Center for Families in Shreveport. And we'll be discussing alcoholism, its causes and effects, and also taking your questions. Our number, of course, toll-free, is 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Betsy, you've been here before on Health Matters. Thanks so much for coming back.
You're quite welcome.
How does a person know when they've moved from being a social drinker, because so many of us, you know, have a drink now and then, to actually being an alcohol abuser or an alcoholic?
I think at first they don't recognize it. I think it takes other people recognizing it. A lot of times they begin to have blackouts. They recognize that something's going on. They can't remember things. They begin to think, I'm going to have a drink in the middle of the day, and it's just kind of springboards into drinking more in the afternoon, drinking more at night, weekend binging. But I think when it starts out and when they first recognize it is when they can't remember what they did the night before.
What specifically is alcohol dependence? I mean, is it psychological, or is it physical, some combination of the both?
Alcoholism and drug addiction is a disease. Mm-hmm. It has to do with all of endorphins and you. There are some people that they just cannot tolerate alcohol or drugs, and what happens is they become become tolerant to certain drugs, certain alcohol, but it is a physical disease. And some people think, well, you know, you can quit, but psychologically you can say you're going to quit, but your body tells you no.
Is it because it's a disease? Is it something that is genetic?
It can be genetic, yes. And more times than not, you will find an alcoholic or a drug addict that they've had a parent, grandparent, uncle, aunt. They've had someone in their family, and they have a tendency to become that. You may have two children in the family, and one child may have a tendency to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. The other one may not. But basically, I do believe that it's a genetic predisposition.
Okay, now you touched on a little earlier some of the signs. So just maybe in a little bit more expanded version, can you touch on the signs of dependence?
It really is more about you try one drink and you have to have another one. You wake up in the morning and you feel like I've got to have a drink to make it through the day. Now, I know we all have to have our coffee. You also find yourself drinking more and more during the middle of the day. You find yourself going home and really needing a drink. Also, you begin to lie about where you've been and what you've been doing. You tend to hide it. Somebody will say, well, are you drunk? Have you been drinking? Well, no, I haven't been drinking. I smell it on your breath. Well, no, I haven't been drinking. So the signs are there. Sometimes, though, as a loved one, we don't want to recognize it. We just think, well, they just have a little bit of a drinking problem and it'll go away, but it doesn't.
Are the physical attributes of drug addiction pretty much the same as alcoholism? I mean, are all of the symptoms the same?
Basically, they are. You have a tendency with drug addiction to be much more manipulative, trying to get drugs. With alcoholism, you can pretty much get alcohol anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty open there. But with a drug addiction, if you're trying to get illegal drugs, or you have to be much more manipulative. But you do begin to take more and more pills. You begin to not remember where you've been or what you've done. You begin to steal and lie. And you also begin to you can have physical signs where you may have hair loss or things like that. Your skin may look a little reddish with rash, where with alcohol, probably you may have a red face. When you sweat, you may smell like alcohol, but with drug addiction, you could have hair loss and things like that, depending on the drug that you're addicted to.
I'm talking with Betsy Williams from the Center for Families in Shreveport, and if you have a question this evening, you can call us toll-free. It's 800-552-8502. Again, the number is 800-552-8502. Just observationally, it seems that, at least in our culture, while both are very serious, alcoholism seems to be tolerated a little more. And what I think of is even going back to, you know, like W.C. Fields and all of that, you know, playing the, you know, the kind drunk and all of that. Obviously, he was drinking all of the time and, you know, people would joke about it and all of that. Why is that, you think?
I think that we as a society got used to the happy drunk, and we didn't really recognize the alcohol as being the reason for a person to be happy. Take, for example, Red Skelton portraying, you know, Clem Cadiddlehopper,
right,
or some of the, you know, we think that was funny. Well, when somebody does that, you know, we just automatically think, well, you know, they're funny. We don't really think of a person as an alcoholic when they're clowning around and when they're funny. We think of them when they're mean or when they really get belligerent. But the happy drunk is what we grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the scene with Dean Martin being the drunk pilot and things
right,
like that. You know, we grew up with the happy drunk. So, you know, people like people sometimes when they're drunk before more than they like them when they're not drunk.
What about friends and family? And I'm not talking about a phone service here. I'm talking about the ways that, you know, alcoholism or substance abuse affects the people around the person who's afflicted.
Basically, you, as a family member, and I am a family member, my father was an alcoholic, you really, you're ashamed. You really, as a wife of an alcoholic or even a drug abuse person, you begin to try to save them. You begin to think, well, you know, I can help them by, you know, doing their work for them, or, gee, you know, they just need a little rest. They need no stress. And what happens is we start enabling them to do more and more of their hiding and their drinking and drugging. But family members don't want to face sometimes what's going on, and it's a hard truth to recognize that you are married or your son or daughter or someone that you love dearly has that problem that you can't do anything about. It's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard when you recognize you can't do anything about it. You can't take them to chemo if they have cancer, or, I mean, when they have cancer, you can take them to chemo,
right,
but you can't take them. They have to go to treatment themselves and do it for themselves.
The number again this evening for Health Matters is 800-552-8502. If you have a question tonight, my guest is Betsy Williams. She's the executive director of the Center for Families in Shreveport. Again, the number 800-552-8502. At the Center for Families, for example, do you find that you deal more with the family members, or do you deal more with those who are suffering from alcoholism, for example?
I think it's 50-50. I think when we have a family member come in, usually the family is the one that calls or comes in and says, you know, I know my loved one has a problem, and the loved one may not recognize it. So I think we really deal more with family and helping them understand they can't enable them, that they have to you know, get them to treatment or encourage them to get to treatment. As far as the alcoholic is concerned, when they come in, a lot of times they're in denial, you know, and they're angry, or they say, oh, I can stop. But when a counselor talks to them about, you know, this is your behavior, this is what's happening to you, when it's played back to you, it looks a whole lot different.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to my next question, because It's also, as you mentioned earlier, easy for other family members, you know, to enable. You know, they know someone, they know maybe somewhere within them that they have a problem, but mm-hmm. they don't really face it, or they don't want to, you know, say that. What are the ways that friends and family can help someone that has a problem realize it for themselves?
I think one thing that a friend or a family member has to do is confront that person and say, you know, you've got a problem, and have the facts. Don't just say, you've got a problem. You know, last week you passed out 3 times. You can't remember where you've been. And look at how much alcohol you've drank. I've seen people, loved ones, even friends, write down these things. They document what they've seen and play it back to the person. Now, they don't always believe them, but because sometimes it takes a person, and I hate to say hit rock bottom, but sometimes it takes a person to hit rock bottom to turn around and see what's happened to them. But the facts, writing the facts down, telling them the facts, and showing them what they're doing, a lot of times does help.
You mentioned it takes for someone to hit rock bottom, but that situation, that rock bottom is going to be different for different people.
It is.
And for some, I would think it could be something very, very serious. I will serious in any context, but for someone else, it might not be that far down. So how does someone recognize that?
I mean, if it, as far as rock bottom is concerned, it could be anything from, you know, being a drunk driver and hitting and killing someone, but it could also be to where they've spent all of their money, mm-hmm. and they turn around and they realize they don't have anything in their checking account and it all went to drugs. Or it could simply be looking in the mirror one day and seeing through those eyes that, you know, I'm not the same person I was, and start remembering who you were. And sometimes that's rock bottom, when you realize you got to start all over and find the person you are.
Mm-hmm. You talk about family members or friends helping someone if they're looking for help. But there are people who cut themselves off. Mm-hmm. They're in the midst of this too. I mean, how do you help? I mean, they may not have someone that can do that, so they're having to find within themselves some indication that they have a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, what do you tell someone like that?
Usually, if there is someone that doesn't have anyone, or just seems to be floating out there, you know, I usually, again, you know, show them the facts of things that are happening to them when they play it back to me. Also, if someone is asking for help, there's tons of help out there. There's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's NARC Anonymous, there's counselors, there's treatment centers, there's outpatient, inpatient. There's a lot of ways of getting help. There's even just going to your pastor and saying, hey, I need help. This is what's happening to me. Mm-hmm. And let them guide it. There are 12-step programs. There's all kinds of help.
Our number to call tonight, 800-552-8502. And we're going to go now to our first caller this evening. This is Dylan calling from Lufkin. Good evening to you. And what's your question tonight?
Hi. I just turned on the radio and had a question. Are you a counselor?
Yes.
Yes. I've wondered, up until I was about 35 years old, I could drink or not drink, and take it or not take it, but I got very depressed, and as a lot of people do, self-medicated with alcohol, mm-hmm. for a good number of years, 6 or 7 years, mm-hmm. and, you know, fully considered myself an alcoholic, and I'm very content and happy now, and I know it would be dangerous for me to drink even if I was happy. I've been sober now for 3.5 years, and I wonder, you know, you get labeled as an alcoholic, and
yeah.
and it didn't hurt anybody to not drink the rest of their life, but I've wondered if you've ever heard of that situation where somebody never had a problem with alcohol and they get to a certain part in their life and it just changes, maybe chemically in the brain, spiritually, physically, and emotionally, and you rely on it.
I think that's very true. I've seen it happen, particularly if someone has lost a loved one And alcohol is a great self-medicator. It makes you forget. It helps you to escape. And I have seen it to where people realize in later on in life that they do have a problem. And, you know, early on you were a social drinker, but there's something about the brain and something about our psyche when we're depressed and we start self-medicating that we realize we've really become relied on alcohol to save us and to escape. And then you were very fortunate, and congratulations, that you recognized it and backed out of that depression and backed out of the drinking, using drugs and drinking as a self-medicator. But I've seen that many times. Sometimes I have seen older adults who are lonely take up drinking, and really, you know, they can't do without it.
You know, you mentioned that, for example, someone might recognize later in life that they're an alcoholic. But can there be a physical change? And I guess what comes to mind as a comparison would be, I know there are allergies, for example, mm-hmm. and you might not be allergic to something most of your life, and then at some point your body will just suddenly start reacting to whatever that chemical is. Can that also work the same way for alcohol, where there actually isn't an addiction earlier on, or a physical one, and then the body just decides one day, you know, it's going to react a different way mm-hmm. to the chemical?
And that's very true. You can, you know, be one of those young drinkers and then leave it alone and have a career and then pick it back up when you're 50, and all of a sudden you can't drink like you used to. I mean, I'm in my 50s. I can't drink like I used to. I know I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not addicted to it. But I think we do come to a point where it's different than when we were younger. It's physical, and I also think it's a little bit of psychology and spiritual that we become dependent on something that we never were dependent on before.
Tonight's Health Matters is about alcoholism or substance abuse, and I'm joined by Betsy Williams from the Center for Families. She's a counselor, psychologist. And if you have a question this evening for her, give us a call at 800-552-8502. It's a toll-free number, of course. How do you formally diagnose either alcoholism or an addiction?
Oh, gosh. There's all kinds of assessments you can do, but it really starts with the self-awareness that something's wrong. And it starts with other people around you recognizing something's wrong. And then you begin to look at the signs and symptoms. Am I drinking too much? Am I drinking in the middle of the day? Do I drink, you know, how much do I drink on the weekend? Do I black out? Do I forget? Am I spending all my money? You know, what am I doing? And then in with drugs, many times people will go to different doctors and get drugs, and then they realize, I can't get it from that doctor, I'm going to get it from this one. And I think it just begin to recognize different signs and symptoms, and you begin to think, oh my goodness, I could be an addict. Sometimes people don't recognize it until they go into treatment and they realize, oh gosh, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict. Some people think they're depressed, but sleep all day. But what happens is they've either drank too much or they've taken too much drugs, and they're taken to the hospital and a doctor says, you know, you really have a problem.
1-800-552-8502, the number to call tonight if you have a question for Betsy Williams. If you're on the outside looking in then, you're a family member, you're a friend, what if they refuse to get help? What do you do?
Well, there's a couple of things that you can do. You yourself can seek help. You yourself can go to an Al-Anon meeting or go to a counselor and ask questions about, you know, what can I do? But for to help the addict or the alcoholic, they really need to recognize it for themselves. You can also, if you're a family member, you could possibly, if they were acting erratic, you could have them committed and let someone, a professional diagnose them. Or you can do what they call an intervention.
And an intervention specifically is?
When you have a professional, a counselor or someone, a substance abuse specialist, And you can call upon a pastor or dear friend or someone to be there. It's not ganging up on them, but it is confronting them. And you have not just yourself, but yourself, perhaps another loved one, a friend, a pastor, and then have a professional there and begin to show them again what has been happening and how much money they've spent and how much trouble they've been in. And intervention, amazingly to me, and I shouldn't say amazingly, it really does work. It helps the person see what he has done to his family and to himself. People aren't too much worried about what they do to themselves, but they don't like doing things to their families.
Sure. Well, you mentioned maybe seeking help from Al-Anon or a counselor if you are, if you know someone and they won't get help. But what if someone starts treatment and they're going well? Do you recommend that family members or the friends also get some sort of counseling during that? Is it generally beneficial to the whole process? And if so, in what way?
I do recommend that that a person who is a family member and their loved one is getting treatment, start with Al-Anon. If you feel that Al-Anon is not, you know, your cup of tea, go to counseling, or go to your local church and talk with your pastor. Talk with someone about how you're feeling, because they're getting treatment. They're getting help. And when they come out, they're going to be different. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that you really need to recognize as a family member, that you need to know that when they come out and they're in recovery, they're going to be very different. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to live in their world totally. They're going to have that other world of addiction.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening. My guest is Betsy Williams, and the number to call, 800-552-8502, a discussion about alcoholism, substance abuse, and for not only discussing the diseases, but also family and friends getting help if you know someone that is suffering from that. What are, because you touched on, you know, when the person's getting treatment, I know there are, most of us, I think, tend to think of like Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's only one kind of treatment. What are some of the more common forms of treatment?
When you're talking about alcoholism, there are certain drugs that you can take, and I'm not familiar with the names of them, but that will make you ill if you drink something. Mm-hmm. There is there have been people who have been treated for addiction with methadone. But a lot of times what it entails is doing group therapy, individual therapy, and doing the 12-step program, which is a spiritual program, and you have 12 steps that you go through. A lot of it is writing letters of forgiveness to yourself and to others, you know, looking at your higher power and changing your life, changing your routine, helping you understand what you need, where you need to be in your life, and that's probably the best treatment that you could receive.
You mentioned earlier some of the other side effects. I mean, people that are afflicted. Can we get some specific? Are there other mental health problems that are common along with alcohol abuse or substance abuse, and how are those addressed?
You can be what they call a dual diagnose. Depression can go along with addiction and alcoholism. You may find sometimes that people who are bipolar or manic depression will be heavy drinkers, or will find a drug of choice that they like. So many times when someone is depressed or is bipolar or any of the emotional diseases such as anxiety or something like that, that they'll self-medicate themselves with alcohol or drugs.
And we'll come back along those lines in a moment here, but I do have another question, and this came in from someone who did not want to go on the air. By the way, the number to call if you do have a question tonight is 800-552-8502, as we're discussing alcoholism and substance abuse. This is from a listener in Shreveport, And they say, I'm a recovering narcotic, clean for over 30 years. A family member is currently suffering from alcoholism and does not want any help from family members. And watching this, I'm beginning to reflect on my past. Is this natural? And can going to NA meetings help deal with this? And as you were talking about this earlier, can my family force an intervention?
It's very natural for you to go back and think about how you were as an addict. It's very natural to you know, in some ways, it's very natural to be fearful that you might fall. After 30 years, congratulations, that's a long time. Family members can, I guess, enforce is a hard word, but family members can push an intervention. And basically with an intervention, the person walks into the room and they're really not aware that this is happening until they walk into the room and realize the number of people there. And people begin to talk with them and show them, you know, what's been happening to them. So basically a family can force, I guess, an intervention upon them. And I think, let me back up with intervention a little bit. I think it works well when a person's there that they trust completely. And that may be you, that may be a cousin, that may be a grandmother, grandfather, or that may be a friend. But when you do an intervention, have at least one person there that they recognize is really, I hate to say, on their side, but is willing to go they trust and they know will go the limits with them. But I hope that answers your question. But yes, it's very common for you to reminisce and be a little bit fearful that, oh, you know, I hope this is not something that's going to start me back on drugs.
The fear, to a certain extent, is one of the things that drives you to stay away from it?
Yes, and I do recommend a meeting. If you feel that you're a little shaky about it, a little nervous, go to a meeting, and you may find somebody there just to chit-chat with and go through the meeting. You may find yourself going to a couple of other meetings.
Now, you mentioned earlier about some of the other health problems that you sometimes find in alcoholics or substance abusers. You mentioned being bipolar. You mentioned depression. This is kind of a chicken and egg question. I mean, how do you know? I mean, is it because the person is bipolar that they're susceptible to being a substance abuser? Or is it, you know, because they're depressed? Or is it the other way around? And how do you weed your way through that when you're trying to treat someone?
I think one thing, when you're bipolar, it's not necessarily mean that you're going to use drugs. And when you use drugs, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be bipolar. I think that basically you treat what you see, and you treat what you feel like you need to treat. With bipolar, you can treat with medication. With addiction, you can treat with going to meetings, things like that. But I think that as far as taking the, you know, is it the egg come first or the chicken? I think it's really more about dealing with one thing at a time and not trying to mesh it together. And you can do that. You can deal with your mental problems and your addictions separately, but, you know, and recognize that if there's an urgency with your addiction, you know, make sure you're in a safe place there. And bipolar, you're in a safe place there.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening on Red River Radio. I'm Kermit Poling. I'm joined by Betsy Williams, psychologist and counselor and the executive director of the Center for Families in Shreveport. Your questions are welcome tonight. We're discussing alcoholism. We're discussing substance abuse. Our number again, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And you were talking earlier. Well, it looks like we've got another call coming in here, and I'll wait until I get the name here, and then we'll take this one. It is interesting, though, because this is obviously a very personal topic for people. Mm-hmm. And as you noticed, you know, the phones have been relatively quiet, and that's absolutely, you know, that's okay. We have Dennis right now in Leesville. Dennis, thanks for calling, and what's your question tonight?
Yes, sir. Well, this concerns, I guess, more for the family than the addict. Do they have anything for where the addict stole, like from the family, to supply their habit or something? Is there something that they can go through or whatever like that?
When, if you have someone that has stolen from a family member, sometimes, and this is, I guess this is called tough love, but sometimes it takes, you know, going to the police and saying this person has stolen this from me, for them to recognize that that's not, you know, that's part of the their addiction is stealing. But you also can, you probably need to have a number of family members confront the person about them being, you know, stealing things, and ask them, you know, who else have you stolen from? Again, I think they do need to be confronted with the theft and it not just be swept under the table. It does need to be confronted, and at times it could be, it is a legal matter and may need to be dealt with in a, as a legal matter.
When you were talking earlier about someone hitting rock bottom, I mean, this could be an example of someone getting into that situation.
Yes.
Our next caller is from Shreveport. Peggy, thanks so much for holding, and what's your question tonight?
I was wondering if there were any drugs that are being developed for addiction, like Wellbutrin has been used for nicotine addiction. If there are any others in the pipeline or anything?
They're always researching new and different drugs. I think there are things out there that they're looking at. And I also think that, you know, with drugs like Wellbutrin and some of the other anti-depression drugs, I think they have discovered that that does help with calming the person down and keeping the person at a good pace, a good level, to where they don't feel they need drugs or alcohol. But there's always research going on, and there are drugs that continually are being tested for that, to eliminate the addiction, or to help eliminate the addiction, or to work with a person to be in recovery.
The number again to be a part of tonight's Health Matters is 800-552-8502. Call us at 800-552-8502. We know there are meetings, but as I was starting to lead into earlier, obviously it's a very personal subject. Some people just aren't comfortable, you know, asking someone, hey, do you know where, you know, I can get help? Where and how can someone do that if this is something very personal to them? Where should they go? How should they find a place?
If you're looking for Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look in the phone book, and there is Alcoholics Anonymous. Call them up, and they will give you a list of meetings. Al-Anon, the same thing. They will give you a list of meetings. Any other, there's all kinds of Anonymouses. Food Anonymous, and all kinds of overeaters and things like that, that is in the telephone directory, and will give you a list of where the meetings are and if the meetings are open or closed or what, how that. So there's the first avenue I would take for looking for a meeting is either look in the phone directory or call a clinic, or you can call the Center for Families and get a listing of Alcoholic Anonymous or Al-Anon or Narcanon or whatever, and just find a meeting that you're comfortable with.
1-800-552-8502, the number to call as we're discussing alcoholism and substance abuse this evening. Again, the number 800-552-8502. Should someone, if they've reached that point, should they just try to quit on their own? Does it ever work?
It does work. People that get up one morning and look in the mirror and recognize, I drink too much, I believe I'm an alcoholic. It's interesting that as long as life has been, I think if a person ever utters the words, I am an alcoholic, many times that makes an awareness. Now, sometimes they say it and it's not an awareness, but people have done that. I know of a couple who both were alcoholics, and the husband laid a bottle of alcohol on the table, kitchen table, and he said, it's going to be there until I know that we're okay. And it sat there for a year on the table, and they never drank a drop, and they quit. Other people, it's not that simple.
We have holding on the line our next caller, also from Shreveport. This is William. William, thanks for calling this evening, and what's your question?
Good evening. I'm a little nervous. I never called a talk show.
That's okay.
But my original question was if either myself or someone in my family may be addicted to drugs, is there an outlet place to where they could get maybe counseling and that person being on a low budget or low income?
Well, I don't want to advertise the center, but the Center for Families does have a sliding fee scale. You can also go to your physician. If you have a physician and go in, and that physician can recommend a place. Now, keep in mind that Narcotics Anonymous is a free meet. Those meetings are free. Now, sometimes they do charge for donuts and coffee. But the best thing to do if you or your loved one, you know that they're hooked on some type of drug, you can also call the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Pines Treatment Center, and they can help you. There's STEPS, which is a detox center. If you call them, they're in the phone book. And these are places that can help you in low income, if you have Medicaid or things like that, insurance like that. But there are other call a counseling center and just ask and see how, you know, what their fees are and things like that. But there are organizations out there that can help you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call. Are there any, I'm thinking now of the broader area, and obviously the Center for mm-hmm. Families is in Shreveport, but we cover a huge region. Mm-hmm. Are there any like national numbers or national organizations that someone can either look up online or if they're trying to find like maybe their local chapter of something? Is there some place we can point them so that they can find help in their area?
If you go on the internet and just look up Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, you will probably find a number of things. There are national organizations such as Councils on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. There's also other in different cities, there's different organizations that are called places like Dark and Dart, and places like in Dallas, I think there's a place called Dart that deals with drug abuse and things like that. So on a national level, if you were on the internet, or I would look up Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse.
You mean just Google that,
yeah.
And have a place to turn. When we were talking about whether or not someone could or should maybe quit on their own, and you mentioned that some people are successful in that. Mm-hmm. I take it the majority that's very difficult for. Why is it that other approaches work better?
I think, for the most part, you know, you can go back to the fact that some people are motivated to quit. Some people can just look at themselves and have enough self-esteem and self-worth that they can quit. Other times, it's they've gotten in it so far, they've done it for years, that there's no going back, and they really need the physical help. But I think a lot of it has to do with the motivation, and also once a person recognizes and not in denial anymore, that's the most helpful thing in the world. Then they can start turning their life around. It's recognizing that you have to change your life. You have to change something. It's the same thing with overeating. When you recognize that you can change something. Now, I recognize that alcoholism is much more of a disease. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your body and your mind working against you. However, if you can just look at it from a standpoint that you're not just helping yourself, but you're helping your family too. But many times people don't want to. It feels too good. The pain, once you quit alcohol or drug, the pain hurts, and they don't want to go through that pain. It's very painful to stop and look at yourself in the raw world without anything medicating you or anything helping you to escape.
Our number for Health Matters this evening, call us at 800-552-8502 as we discuss alcoholism and substance abuse. My guest is Betsy Williams, the Executive Director of the Center for Families in Shreveport. Early we were talking about, you know, family members or friends, you know, seeking a counselor. How specifically do you help the people surrounding the addict or the alcoholic?
I think one thing, you start with education. You start with, you know, some people, especially addiction, some people do not really know what is a drug. For example, if a loved one is hooked on a barbiturate or mm-hmm. an amphetamine, sometimes loved ones, if they recognize what it is and understand what it's doing to the person's body. So you start with education, and then you start with, you know, what really is recovery? What does it mean to recover, and how can you encourage them to recover? Again, it's up to them, but to be supportive in their recovery process. And what recovery really is that they have stopped and they have changed their life and they are recovering. They're recovering from the disease. A person is usually in recovery for the rest of their life. But that is the same with a chronic illness. If you're in recovery from diabetes or something like that, you are a diabetic, but you've got it maintained. So with a loved one, it's basically just understanding first what is it, what is the drug, understanding the symptoms and signs, understanding why a person may have become an alcoholic, whether it's genetics or, you know, whether they were depressed or if something's happened to them. Mm-hmm. Also try to understand what pain caused them to start their alcoholic trek or their drug trek. But it basically start with education, because sometimes people just don't understand. They don't know that, oh my gosh, that drug is addictive.
Does that directly relate, and I'm thinking now in terms of, you know, you as a counselor and what you might do in specifically in your line of work, does that directly relate to the treatment that you give the alcoholic or the abuser?
It does, because you really, it sounds kind of simple in a way, but sometimes with the addict and the alcoholic, you are educating them as to what has happened to them and what that drug or that alcohol is doing to their body. And then you move into what is recovery? What does it mean to recover? What kind of person am I going to be if I'm not drinking or drugging anymore? Mm-hmm. And like that person. Also, it has to do with camaraderie and being other people who are in the same boat supporting them. Sometimes family members find that a person who has been in treatment and they come out have these best buddies and they don't understand why they're so close to them. It's because they've all gone through the same boat and they need that camaraderie.
A shared experience. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that in just a moment. We have Pierre in Bossier who is online right now. Pierre, go ahead with your question this evening.
Yeah, I'm an alcoholic and I would like to quit. And they have a whole lot of programs like the Hay and all that to help you along. However, I'm an atheist. And all those programs are more or less based on the belief of God.
Mm-hmm.
So what does an atheist do to quit drinking, and where does it go to get help?
Good question.
You know, that is a very good question. And I think the one thing that you can count on, if you go to one AA meeting and find a sponsor, and what that is somebody that's in the same boat as you are, and they can help you. Like if you see you want, find someone that you can call in the middle of the night, 24 hours a day, when you're about to take a drink, and talk to them. And that's really the best thing that you could do. It's not about God then. It's about you and the person on the other line and that person helping you to understand you don't need that drink. And that is something that can help you. Also, you know, they always say, well, don't be around alcohol, you know, avoid things like that. However, life is filled with alcohol and it's filled with things, you know, parties and things. Mm-hmm. But I think as far as an atheist, a person that is trying to get through their addiction and they're not into believing in God, I think find someone that you can call and talk to that understands you and respects your beliefs and can help you get through the first few days of that you've stopped, and to help you understand that they'll be there and take that drink from you and help you walk through that. I think that would be the best thing to help you.
You mentioned finding someone to sponsor you. Mm-hmm. And generally when I think in terms of, you know, sponsoring someone, this is someone that, you know, is, you know, outside. They sponsor you before you're actually mm-hmm. in there. But in these programs and all of that, it's possible what you're saying then to meet someone that's actually there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then how do you do that? You just say, hey, someone want to sponsor me? Or how does that work?
It depends on the meeting. You can go to some meetings and people will start talking about, this is my sponsor, that's my sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can call Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcs Anonymous and say, you know, I'm looking for a meeting to go to and I'm looking for a sponsor. And there are people that are dedicated to the sobriety and to, stopping and being stopped, recovery, and they can help you find someone.
Another question, this more in line of counselors. Do you find the best counselors have gone through this themselves?
Yes.
Because you had mentioned at the beginning that you had a family member that was mm-hmm. that was. I mean, is this really typical in the profession or people who focus on this?
I think the best counselors for an alcoholic or a drug addict are those that are in recovery. Because they really know where you've been and what you've done, and they've changed their life, and you can be an example. And they really do know how to talk to you. There's a language. You know, we on the outside world who aren't addicts or alcoholics, there is a whole different language out there that they're learning and they're growing in that's not a part of the non-alcoholic or non-addict. So... yeah, it's it's different.
We're talking about alcoholism and substance abuse tonight on Health Matters. I'm joined by Betsy Williams, who's the executive director of the Center for Families in Shreveport, and we have Billy, who's calling from East Texas in the Lufkin Nacogdoches area. Billy, thanks for holding. What's your question tonight?
I just wanted to tell that fella that. He doesn't have to believe in God to get sober. I've been sober 23 years, if I make it till September, that is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they told me when I first came back that I didn't have to believe in God just to believe that they did. And
that's right.
I hung around long enough to get some belief in, if nothing else, the people in the rooms with Alcoholics Anonymous that were there, and I could see they were beginning to be happy. And, you know, some of them did. Some of them had a lot of years, and some of them didn't have but a few days.
That's right.
I could relate to those that didn't have but a few days. I could still see them shaking like I was.
That's right.
You were earlier talking about hitting the bottom. No, my bottom I'd hit before I got there, and with all my heart I wanted to die, and I asked whatever was out there because I didn't have, whatever it was, whether it's God, the devil, or whatever, to end my life, and I meant that with all of my heart. And a few days later, I wound up in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was truly mad at whatever it was that was out there that got me there. And I ran in and out the doors for a few months. And the day that I got up off that bar stool, beer can in the trash. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to whoop somebody because that screwed up my life.
Billy, thank you so much for letting us in on such a personal story. Betsy, do you find that's a typical situation, what he's describing?
It is typical. You know, people go to these meetings, and the first time they go in there, it's like, you know, these people are not me. I don't know these people. I'm not like these people. But when you start listening to their stories and you start hearing, oh, God, I missed my daughter's graduation because I was drunk, you start you start seeing yourself. And then you get really angry and you think, well, these people aren't going to help me. But you keep going back. It's like you run in the door and you run, like you said, you run in the door and you run out. And somewhere along the line, you realize that these people really believe in you and really want to help you. And it's not that they just want to take you and do the things for you. They want you to see that you can help yourself.
Mm-hmm. Of course, most of what we're talking about here, we're talking about adults primarily. But in our culture, of course, alcohol and drugs,
yes. You know,
our children get exposed to it at what seems to be an earlier and earlier mm-hmm. age. How do you work with kids? What's different about it? And you know, how do you treat them?
With children, particularly adolescents, for the most part, adolescents are not, they're like we were as adolescents. They're immortal. It's not about them. They're never going to be an addict. You know, addiction is way down the road if they would be. And it's very difficult to help them understand that they could be alcoholics and addicts at the age of 12, 9. But it's more about just keep reiterating, keep educating, keep supporting, keep helping them understand that marijuana joint is not helping them play football better or pass the test, and that they're hurting their future. Many times children don't think about their future.
Mm-hmm.
They think about right now and what feels good. So it's very difficult at times to work with children and to work with as they go, and because they believe, and in our culture, as I said before and many times, it's rampant, and there's drugs and alcohol everywhere, and you know, all they see is that it makes them feel good. So you have to really again start with education and explain things to them as, you know, this is what's going on with you, and to talk about peer pressure and kind of explain, just continue to work with them, just continue to talk with them and continue to show them that you believe in them.
We have about 7 or 8 minutes left to tonight's program. If you'd still like to get your question in, give us a call, 800-552-8502. Now, you mentioned peer pressure, which I think mm-hmm. most of us understand, but it got me thinking that, you know, again, in dealing with adults, you know, you're talking about going to an AA meeting, and of course you're there with other people, mm-hmm. you know, who might not be exactly like you, but generally probably in the same age range.
Yes.
What are there any kind of support groups for young people?
An adolescent can even go to an AA meeting or a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. There's not really a formal AA meeting or NARCS meeting for an adolescent, but they can go to the adult meeting and find, the best thing for an adolescent is to find a sponsor and find, it could be an adult or it may be someone who is coming out of their teens into their 20s and or someone who just is an adolescent and has recognized that they are, you know, heading down the wrong path and they have helped themselves. It's a shame that we don't have any kind of formal, and I think that anything formal for children as far as, but I think a good thing for children would be to go to an Al-Anon meeting, because most, for the most part, children who are addicts and alcoholics or drinking alcohol at age of 9 or taking something at the age of 9, more than likely a family member has given it to them mm-hmm. or has started them on that. And Al-Anon can help them go through the process of getting into recovery. And but for children, treatment, an outpatient center or their physician, their pediatrician can work with them and help them. When you do drug screens and things like that, you help parents to understand what drug and what's going on with them.
Well, this was going to be my next question then. You're a parent, and you see that your kid's in trouble, and let's say that the reasons behind it aren't necessarily obvious. What should you do? Obviously, we want to help our kids, but mm-hmm. but what do you tell a parent that comes in there and says, help, what do I do?
First off, you ask them, you know, what type of environment is their child or their adolescent in. You recommend Al-Anon to our Al-Anon to the parent because they can go to Al-Anon if they have an addict or an alcoholic child. And I think for the most part, help parents with the signs and symptoms and to give them activities that they can do with their children, talk to them. You know, on TV they're always saying, talk to your child about drugs, talk to them. Mm-hmm. Parents need to be educated on drugs. They need to know what's out there and what's going on. And the best thing for a parent is to know what's going on with your child. Know who their friends are. Know what school, you know, what's going on in school. Not, you don't have to be nosy and read their diary, but do some tough love. Let them know there are rules and regulations. Keep those curfews going. And if you see that they are really drowning in alcohol and drugs, get them help. Go to a physician, go to a center, go to a counseling center, and start that process of getting that education and talking about recovery and relapse prevention.
Just one more question. We're getting very close to the end of the program tonight. How do you determine when someone needs something more severe? And I'm thinking like a detox program, or if they need to be committed into a facility. What is the dividing line here?
I think when you find that a person cannot get out of bed, or that a person is acting irrational, they're being very defiant, they're slurring their speech, they're staggering, they're really falling around, or they're crying a lot, they're hiding, they are being very belligerent at times, and other times they're very meek and mild. The thing that really, I think it's that they're not acting like themselves. Mm-hmm. That they are have become very cocky, very belligerent towards you. They swing at you, things like that. And also the other extreme is that they stay in bed all day, or they are late for work all the time. They lose their jobs. And also the simple thing of that you notice that they can't stop drinking, that they are drinking all the time. You notice empty bottles. You notice things are going on. You see that their skin is red, that they're, you know, when they sweat, they smell like alcohol. You know, they really need detox.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is about detox is they have to want to be detoxed. But when you're noticing they're acting irrational and not doing, you know, doing things that you have seen them do normally, then that's a time when you need to seek help, perhaps even commitment or something like that.
And, well, there we are. There's the music. We're at the end of the program. Betsy Williams, I want to thank you so much for being part of Health Matters. Betsy Williams, the executive director of the Centers for Family in Shreveport. Health Matters, of course, is a general information program. And if you have a medical condition, you should always consult with your physician or counselor. Tonight's program has been produced by Renee Moran, engineered by Rick Shelton, with help from Wally Derleth. I'm Kermit Poling. Thanks so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll hear you and see you on the next Health Matters here on Red River Radio.